Welcome to Stifel's Investment Strategy Brief, a monthly recap of the macroeconomic and market environment.
Well, greetings and welcome to the Investment Strategy Brief podcast. This is Michael O'Keefe, Stifel's Chief Investment Officer. It's May 2024, and we're still focused on the concept of higher for longer. That'll be the topic of today's session with a lot of new learnings. And we do want to get into it from a few perspectives. I want to reinforce something we talked about last time, which is there remains just an enormous amount of optimism around artificial intelligence. So recall that we talked about that being, from our side, sort of our work anchored in our longer-term investment themes, that report from vision to value, our long-term investment themes, which can be found on stifelinsights.com. And, you know, embedded in that, there's the idea of the fourth industrial revolution, technological innovation, blurring the boundaries between the physical, digital, and biological worlds. Well, AI is all over that. It's all part of that. But we see AI in our other themes like securing strategic resources, shifting demographics, the new consumer, and productive competition. Now, we know that AI is impacting the economy. It's impacting productivity, making it better. It's impacting the job market to a degree, and this is all really early days with this. But we know that sort of, again, it's sort of reinforcing that idea of productive competition, either between countries or companies. And as I've said before, when it comes to investing, we sort of think of AI opportunities in three buckets. Enablers are the infrastructure for AI. Innovators are those companies trying to take advantage of AI to do better, and then there will be increasingly disruptors trying to revolutionize certain industries or sub-industries with AI. It's all based on data, lots of data being created, as we know. And as I mentioned, you know, the estimate is over $15 trillion in additional global GDP through 2030, the result of artificial intelligence. So it's having a big impact. I think we talked last time about some of the examples of AI. There's healthcare, really around drug discovery, agriculture, really around precision farming, industrials affected by essentially sensors being installed on equipment and monitoring things carefully, and then even places like aerospace where augmented reality is assisting technicians as they do what they do. So again, a lot of optimism around AI, but this idea of higher for longer is one of the headwinds we've been discussing. So fiscal transition, increased debt since the financial crisis, now interest rates back to pre-financial crisis levels, where the market, you know, 10 years, round numbers, 4.5%, with forward rates at 10 years out and 20 years out at 4-5%. So markets expecting rates to stay higher, debt is up. That means consumers, businesses, and the government really all have to deal with learning how to manage a higher cost of higher debt. So the higher for longer thing is creating headwinds. We've talked about that before. And we are seeing some cracks in the consumer. It's starting with sentiment. It's starting with confidence around the future. And it's also starting with an increase in delinquencies. So think auto loans, credit cards, things like that. Now, another headwind that we're wrestling with, of course, is the geopolitical tension sort of list around the world. We've got trade tensions increasing between the U.S. and China. They were already pretty high, but they're getting higher. It's becoming kind of an election topic. We've got the fiscal transition thing affecting our economy for sure. But then, of course, the very unfortunate military points of conflict in Ukraine and Israel, Hamas. And so all of that is sort of headwinds to a more positive environment. But it's the kind of thing that we're monitoring. With all that said, the biggest headwind, almost by construction from the Fed, is higher interest rates. And so an update on that would include the idea that, hey, one of the reasons that inflation is higher is the job market's been very tight. And so, for example, one of the ratios that we keep an eye on is the ratio of openings to unemployed. So think of it as the number of jobs available for each person looking for a job, where the long-term average sits at, you know, in very round numbers, about 0.75. So think of it as about three quarters of a job available for every job being sought, every person looking for a job. And basically that ratio really blew out in a way to say that as the pandemic caused a shutdown, it sort of collapsed. And then in the recovery and all the support from the recovery, the number of jobs really exploded. So we got to a point of like two jobs for every opening or for every person looking for a job. That's come down to, you know, in round numbers, 1.4. So it's cooled some, but there's certainly a long way to go. So what that means is that essentially the labor market remains tight. Wage growth remains above the level that the Fed would like to see. And what we've seen is a soft resurgence in inflation. So that inflation, let's say, call it consumer price index, producer price index, remain above on a 3-month rolling average basis, you know, well above actually the Fed's, the equivalent of the Fed's 2% target. In fact, CPI, honestly, the last couple metrics of 3-month rolling average are roughly double. So think of it as an annualized rate of 4%, where we want to see 2%. So the Fed's sort of saying, hey, we're watching this, we're analyzing this, we want to see it cool. And when we dig into the numbers, of course, shelter is really one area that has been a real culprit, meaning that rent and owner equivalent rent, the increases being seen there are well above the Fed's 2% target. And that component of inflation is really contributing to this stickiness. Now, as it relates to the Fed, then, you know, basically the Fed has been sort of softly talking about higher for longer, meaning we're not going to cut rates anytime soon. And frankly, even today, it's Wednesday, May 22nd, when I'm recording this, we just got minutes from the last Fed meeting where actually they sort of got into the open question in their typical sort of discussion and exploration kind of form. Hey, is policy restrictive enough? Should we be going further? So, you know, the bottom line is the Fed for sure is saying, hey, we're not going to cut anytime soon. We've got to see inflation get better. And in fact, the market, as I think we talked about last time, has kind of turned all the way around. We started the year where the market thought we would be seeing 6 quarter point cuts. That's down to maybe 1 to 2 based on Fed futures. And so, and by the way, that's, you know, in round numbers, what our forecast has been for this year. So the bottom line is that we shouldn't expect any action from the Fed, potentially none this year. If it happens, it's going to happen late in the year or into early 2025. Now, another sort of driver of this inflation is just a stronger economy. So the economy has been bumping along a lot more robustly than people first expected. We do see things cooling in our view. We're watching the consumer pretty closely in terms of softening activity. And so that's something that we're mindful of. I also think, you know, we look at things like corporate data, NFIB Optimism Index for small companies, basically, you know, seeing that the hard data, think of it as job creation, job openings, inventory plans, et cetera, but all still pretty firm. But when it comes to the softer data, sort of expected business conditions and outlook for expansion, expected real sales, expected credit conditions, companies are starting to get more worried, basically, is the takeaway. Now, when it comes to the consumer, back to that, you know, we did observe that we've seen a lot of different CEOs in their various earnings reports and such talking about the consumer. And I would say it's sort of mixed. We see some acknowledging that the consumer are remaining in a good place. Sort of demand is still there. But then we are seeing a fair number of comments really around the lower income consumer. So I think what some have described as sort of a K pattern, where the wealthier folks are buying and they're consuming, but people on a more limited budget not as well off, basically feeling the pinch a little bit, you know, it could be related to inflation or a cooling of the job market a little bit, or wage growth softening a little bit. So think of it as those are the kind of cracks we're watching for, right? And we are watching for a slowdown. So the fact that we're seeing that sort of show itself a little bit further in the consumption space is not surprising to us. So we'll keep an eye on that pretty closely. Now, as it relates to the markets, this idea of higher for longer has popped interest rates up a bit higher than where we started the year. So in round numbers, we're about 0.5% higher when we look at the yield curve, especially the 10-year treasury. That means bonds, the yields on bonds are a little bit more attractive. So that's a positive. But with all of this, and even though we saw a market turn and move lower, the equity market in April, really as the market started to digest this idea that the Fed wasn't cutting, honestly, since then, it's recovered again. And essentially, the market has held up very well. On a traditional cap-weighted basis, the market is a bit overvalued. And it's, you know, attributed almost in a dramatic sense to the Magnificent Seven. When we look at our analysis of the Magnificent Seven, we've kind of extended that this year to look at longer-term earnings growth expectations. So basically, the bottom-up analysis for longer-term growth has the Mag 7 earnings growth estimate targeted at 20% or tagged at 20% compared to the rest of the S&P 500 at 12%. So once again, the multiples for the Magnificent Seven are a bit higher, 29.7. This is PE, sort of current price to next 12-month earnings. And the remaining rest of the market, 18.4. But when we adjust those PEs for that growth rate I mentioned, that PEG ratio, once again, what it shows us is that things are much more in line and the Magnificent Seven aren't necessarily overvalued on that basis. Now, what kind of comes to market performance, those big tech-oriented companies have held up pretty well. And I think this is as of the close of yesterday that the Magnificent Seven Index, which is published by UBS, is up 20.7% year-to-date compared to the broad cap-weighted S&P 500 up 12.2 and the equal-weighted S&P 500 up 6.9. So that pattern of performance of the bigger tech-oriented companies driving the cap-weighted indices higher, that continued from 2023 into 2024. But we keep telling folks, recognize that this idea of sort of the big cap market cap-weighted index outperforming it versus the equal-weighted, that pattern comes and goes. And so that's something we need to be mindful of, especially as it relates to, you know, sort of active management, which tends to operate on a more equal-weighted than cap-weighted basis. Now, when we look forward, I do want to sort of focus in on a few things. The first being the global election supercycle. We've talked about this before, the idea that candidates are focused on economic opportunity. That means protectionism is kicking in. And honestly, when we take that sort of pattern we're seeing globally and bring it back to the U.S., we're seeing, for example, Biden and Trump kind of trading China threats. Like, what are we going to do to limit China in terms of China's trade with the U.S., which, again, may be the right thing to do, but it's interesting to see it become kind of quickly an election topic, if you will, that the candidates are really energetic about. Now, one thing I'll mention is last week we had the Stifel Blueprint Conference. It was a great conference, you know, sort of intimate interaction with a variety of colleagues and other industry professionals, small group gatherings, and then a few main stage sessions. One of the main stage sessions was our chairman and CEO, Ron Kruszewski, hosting Ari Fleischer, so former White House press secretary, and basically got into kind of where we're headed in terms of the election. And Ari pointed out some interesting things, among them the idea that we could see a flip in power in D.C., where the presidency and the Senate flip to Republican control and the House flips to Democratic control. So we're in divided government, but kind of the mirror image of where we are today. So I thought that was pretty interesting. They got into as well kind of the demographics sort of, and I won't get into the details, just to say that different pockets of the voting population that maybe historically have voted for Democrats are now voting for Republican and vice versa, right? So there's just some shifts happening that I'm not sure if they're surprising or not, but are just different from what we've experienced in history. But, you know, the main takeaway is, I think, hey, it's still super early and it remains a bit of a toss-up in terms of the election. As ever, I would just mention that we're digging into data. I happen to be working deep into sort of housing. The housing market overall in some ways is held up. It's a pretty tight market, but we're seeing little cracks here and there. We've got data coming out on consumer sentiment and retail sales and housing and inflation, and we'll see Fed meetings and so forth. So there's just going to be a lot to process through the balance of the year. I do want to reiterate this idea that stiefelinsights.com is a good resource to go to check out, honestly, this series, the corresponding video and a slide deck, as well as, a broader body of work. So I'd invite you to check it out. So thanks so much for listening to this episode. And we look forward to bringing you the next one in June. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Stiefel's Investment Strategy Brief. Be sure to subscribe wherever you're listening to automatically receive each month's podcast in your feed.